We're looking tonight at Nehemiah chapter 2, and I read verse 1. And it came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. So we've begun to look at this wonderful, amazing book of Nehemiah. So many lessons for us to learn from it. Such a wonderful character, such an inspiring character. And Nehemiah was, just as with some of these other Old Testament saints, with Esther and Mordecai that we looked at not so long ago. Well, Nehemiah is another one, and a leader also, for such leadership qualities, such dependence on God, such a way, an example to us in how to carry out the work of God and how to apply ourselves in dependence on God to the work that He has given us to do. My title for this evening is, from this chapter, How God Accomplishes His Purposes. And we looked at last week, chapter 1, and there we discovered how when Nehemiah heard the news from Jerusalem and the state that Jerusalem was in, and the need for the walls to be repaired and the city to be cleaned out, there was a lot of work to be done, how the city was in a reproach, well, he wanted to do something about it. He prayed earnestly, and he also said, Lord, use me. It seems like he felt like Esther did, that he was brought into the kingdom for such a time as this. At the end of verse chapter 1, verse 11, he prayed, I pray thee, thy servant this day, prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. It seems like he already has in his mind a willingness to do God's work, to leave Shushan, the palace, and make his way, all that way, that long 1,000-mile journey to Jerusalem to rebuild the work. And he feels that God has put him in this position and brought him into the kingdom also for such a time as this. And so this is what he's been praying for. And so when we come to chapter 2, it's now 4 months later since he made that, began praying. And in the month Nisan, which would be March and April, March and April. And it seems like now is the time for him to do his period of service. He wasn't serving the king from January all the way through to December. They would take turns, the cupbearers. There were different cupbearers. He wasn't the only one. But now it's his time. It's his time, it seems, to serve the king. And when he comes to serve the king, we read here that it was the first time he was sad in his presence. Every day he had been thinking about Jerusalem. Every day he'd been praying about the state. Every day he had been burdened, and he couldn't hide it. I don't think he deliberately went into the king's presence as a sad person. It would get him in trouble, as we'll see. But he just couldn't hide it. It was something that just came out in his appearance because he was so concerned about all that was happening in Jerusalem, his homeland. It was sorrow of heart. And the king notices that. In verse 2, he said, Why is thy countenance sad, Nehemiah, seeing you're not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Well, even the king notices that for the very first time in his presence, Nehemiah is sad. Or may I just say, as a little application, a side application here, it's good sometimes to notice people. We don't want to be all the time making judgments about people's appearances. But it's good sometimes to see, oh, that person is not the same today. And to inquire, even as this king was willing to inquire after his servant, as it were, his cupbearer. He was willing to condescend to inquire how things are, what's wrong? And it's good for us sometimes if we see a brother or a sister a little bit not quite the same. Then we ask, is everything okay? In a very friendly kind of way, concerning kind of way, just as this king has done. Anyway, that's just a by and by. But we read here that Nehemiah was very sore afraid. He was dreadfully afraid when the king asked him this thing, because he was not supposed to be afraid. He was full of fear, but he had to hide it. He couldn't show such sadness in the king's presence. It was something similar. Do you remember in Esther as well? Mordecai, when he was mourning, well, he was mourning because of the edict that had come down from the king, and he put on his mourning clothes, and he could only go as far as the king's gate. He couldn't go into the compound of the king, because it was not permitted for the king to be so close to death and bereavement and to see mourning. It was forbidden. He had to only see the happy things. But this is something similar here. That's why Nehemiah is so afraid, full of fear, when the king asks him this question. But also, probably because now is the time that he has to speak. Now, this is the thing that he has been praying for. And now the door opens. And this is actually my first point, how providence opens a door. And now this door is opening, and now he has to have the courage to speak and to ask the king for permission. And so in verse 3, he mentions the reason and the cause why of his sadness, because of his home city, his hometown, lying in waste and the gates consumed with fire. And the king then asks him, for what dost thou make request? Amazing. Here is the king asking his cupbearer, what do you want from me? And the door is opened in a wonderful way for Nehemiah to make a request. And we can see in this how God is working out his purposes. It's his purpose when God determines to accomplish his purposes, he often works through people, or usually works through people, especially his people. He'll pick up and use, as he prepared Nehemiah for this occasion, because his purpose, his plan, his will is that those walls are rebuilt and the temple worship is restored, the people are reformed. That's all part of God's plan, and he's going to use Nehemiah to accomplish that. But he's also using the king, and even unbelievers are in God's hand, and God even uses them unwittingly to them, unknowingly to them. They are also a part of are being used to accomplish God's purposes. You see this, isn't it? In the Calvary, in the cross, God's purpose was to make a way of salvation. Christ came, prepared by God, sent by God on that mission. He's going to be the main person accomplishing that. But we read that he was put to death by wicked hands. He was put on the cross by wicked hands, by evil people. God used even the evil intentions and the evil actions of people to accomplish his purposes. So, in a wonderful way, God works in providence to set in motion his will and his plan. And that's what is happening here. Nehemiah has been praying, feeling the burden of the situation, and providence opens the door for him to do that work. Could be said, we could also think about Martin Luther and the work of the Reformation, again raised up by God for such a time as that. And those, of course, there were many others who were working with him. But then secondly, we can look at this emergency prayer. In verse 4, when the king says, what do you want? What's your request? We read, so I prayed to the God of heaven. In between the king's question and Nehemiah's response and answer to the king, is this prayer to God, this emergency prayer, this lightning prayer, this impromptu prayer that he prayed to the God of heaven. He didn't get down on his knees, but right there in that one moment, he shot up a prayer to God. And what did he pray for? Well, it's amazing what one can achieve in a very small moment of time. This prayer, though very brief, friends, and momentary, well, it must have been so full. A prayer, that it must have been a prayer thanking God for even the opportunity that has come up before him, an answer to prayer. It was a plea, no doubt, for help and for wisdom to frame his question in the right way so he would know exactly what to ask for. And a plea also for boldness with which to ask it, and for blessing upon that request. All of these could be in a compound way included in that prayer in a brief moment of time. And I'm sure you know how we can combine all these things to good effect. And this is what Nehemiah does. He prays to the God of heaven, a brief emergency prayer to seek God's help and God's blessing before he answers. Well, there's so much for us to even think about an application of this verse. We must have our set times of prayer, our habits of prayer, when we pray regular times. But then also throughout the day, we should be praying always at different times. Live in the atmosphere of prayer. Always throughout the day, be shooting up emergency prayers to the Lord. Sometimes things you've been praying for, you'll see answered before you, before your very eyes. Oh, you don't have to wait till you get home to thank God. You can thank him right there and then and praise him for that answer. Maybe you've been praying for a colleague or a neighbor to witness to, or a patient to speak to, and that opportunity comes up. You've been earnestly asking God specifically for these people, and the opportunity comes up, and you can quickly pray, Lord, help me to answer, help me to witness to this person before you speak to them. Or it may be we're out on a church witness, maybe this Saturday, or other times when we're out in the high street, and you're speaking to somebody and they ask you a question. Well, you can, before you answer, you pray and ask the Lord that to help you and to give you an answer with which to speak to them. Maybe you're tempted, as we all are in some way or other during the day, tempted to get angry, tempted to think an ill thought, tempted to speak an unkind word. Well, before it happens, pray and ask the Lord to help you to overcome it and to give you more grace to put that thing away, to deliver you. Well, maybe, friends, you hear some bad news or some sad thing that happens in your life, some troubling news. Well, then again, don't wait. You don't need to wait until you get home to mention it to the Lord. Speak to the Savior. Unburden yourself there and then, and ask for his grace to help. This is how we are to live as believers, always in the praying atmosphere. We cannot be on our knees at all times, but we can live in this same way as Nehemiah obviously did. Christ is near us, friends. Christ is near us all through the day, near us to help us, near us to bless us, near us to strengthen us, to train us. In so many ways, he is near to us. So, emergency prayer. And then thirdly, we see the king's favors in verses 5 to 10. Or we should possibly say divine favors, because that is really what they are. Well, Nehemiah asks in verse 5 to be sent to Judah, to the city of his father's sepulchres, that he may build it. And the king said to him, the queen also sitting by him, "How long will you be away? How long is your journey? And when will you return?" And so it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. How long did Nehemiah ask for? Well, it doesn't say to us exactly how long, but Nehemiah chapter 5 and verse 14, it tells us there that he was the governor of Judea for 12 years, after which he returned to Shushan. I find it hard to believe that he asked for 12 years absence from the king. I don't think the king would have granted him such a long period of time. But more likely he asked for a shorter period of time, perhaps 6 months, 7 months. He needed a couple of months maybe to get to Judah. The wall itself took 52 days to complete, and then another two months or so to get back. Maybe 6-7 months is what he asked for. But we know that he probably returned to the king. And then the king, when he saw and heard of the good things that were happening in Judah, sent him back again, within a year, the same period of time. And then he continued for those 12 years. Here we see permission granted by the king to go, and he's released. The king didn't want to release him, really. He's reluctant to release him because he's a good servant. He's a loyal worker. He doesn't want to lose him. He wants to have him come back. Well, that's a lesson in itself. But verse 7 and 8, we see how Nehemiah asks for provision as well from the king. And the king grants it to him. He asks for letters so that he can have a safe journey all the way to Judah. And also he asks for materials to build the wall that is close to the temple, the wall of the city, and even a little house for himself to live in. Most likely, definitely, I would say a modest house, not a palace or something extravagant, but a small place for him. And then at the end of verse 8, the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. So there's permission, and here there is also the provision. Everything is provided for by the king, but it's the Lord, because God's hand is upon Nehemiah. God is in the work, and where God leads and it's God's will, God will provide. We know that. In verse 9, also he is given protection. The king sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. Not just ordinary soldiers, but the captains of the army were given to him so that he could have that safe passage all the way back to Jerusalem. So in a wonderful way, the Lord turns the king's heart to give these favors to Nehemiah. Interesting, isn't it? Nehemiah asked the king for these things. Ezra, just in the previous book, he refused to ask. He was ashamed to ask. The same king, actually, in fact. He was ashamed to ask because he wanted to depend on God and trust in God. Well, sometimes maybe the lesson is we always depend on God, but sometimes maybe we make use of doors which are open to us for the Lord's work. And yet here we see Nehemiah. He doesn't take anything to himself. He doesn't attribute any glory to himself. He doesn't say, "I've done all these things." In verse 8, he gave all the credit to God. What a leader. According to the good hand of my God upon me. That's the way, friends. That's the way to obtain God's blessing, and the way also to keep his blessing, to credit the Lord and to give him the glory for even the blessings that we receive, and not to take it to ourselves. And then finally, my fourth point is leading from the front. Well, just before that, in verse 10, we read about these enemies who are going to vaunt themselves and oppose the work. Sanballat, verse 10, the Horonite and Tobiah, the servant, the Ammonite, both Samaritans from Samaria, and they were, we read first initially, that it grieved them when they saw the return of Nehemiah, they saw him coming to help the children of Israel. Well, they were just passively, as it were, upset and annoyed and grieved at these things. But that's going to escalate. That's going to escalate into outright opposition, as we will see as time goes on. In fact, even before, in verses 19 and 20, their opposition moves up another gear. But before we come to that, when Nehemiah came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days, then he went by night to do a survey of the gates and the situation. Under the cover of darkness, he makes this inspection of the city walls. He goes by the valley gate in the southwest of the city, walks his way round on his beast initially on the south, and then up the east side by the Kidron River, and he sees the dilapidated state of the walls and the gates and the rubbish heaps that are there, and at some point he decides to return all the way return by the way that he came. And initially he didn't make known his intentions to the leaders, but then later on he reveals to the officials, the Jewish people, the Jewish nobles and priests and rulers, why he has come. But we see here, just in this one, in this action of Nehemiah going to inspect the gates and the situation, that we as leaders in the church, those of us who are in positions of leadership and eldership, well, we need to always be observing what needs to be done. What needs to be done in the church? What areas are there that require attention, whether with people or spiritual situation, or even with the building as well physically? What things do we need to pay attention to, because this is the Lord's house, the Lord's work? In verses 17 and 18, Nehemiah encourages everyone to join in this work. He's not going to do everything by himself. He is not an independent Superman. He is going to work together with the people and to get the job done. Come and let us build up the work, the walls of Jerusalem, he says in verse 17. He tells them of the support that he has received from the king for the work, and the way that God has led him and given him success this far in his journey. And their response is a positive one, and they want to apply themselves as well to the work. And again here, for leaders, but in fact for all of us, our responsibility to encourage one another to be a worker in the church, to do something for the Lord, to try and show to our brothers and our sisters that the work we do for Christ is a good work. The work that we do for the church is a good work. The work of witness is a good work. The work of encouraging others is a good work. The work of maintaining even the building is a good work. All these things that we seek to do for Christ, we have to try and get alongside our brothers and sisters to encourage everyone to be involved. Come, let us build up the work. Let us put ourselves to this work. Let us apply ourselves heartily. It is a good thing that we are doing. And then finally, in verses 19 and 20, we see Sanballat and Tobiah, their opposition moves up a level. Now they are mocking. Before, it was just they were unhappy personally themselves in their own minds and hearts and amongst themselves. But now they mock, they ridicule, and they laugh at Nehemiah, and they accuse him. What is this thing that you are doing? Will he rebel against the king? Well, maybe they didn't know the favors that had been granted, the permission that had been granted to Nehemiah. Nehemiah's response, verse 20, "Then answered I them, and said unto them, The God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build. But ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem." God will prosper us. You have nothing to do with us. You have no portion. You have no connection with Jerusalem. You have no right to its blessings and its prosperity in the future. We will have nothing to do with you. We do not need your work, your hands with this work. And so Nehemiah leads from the front with faith and dependence upon God. Others are watching him and listening to him, but they respond now. They've been somewhat lax. The things have been left untouched for a number of years, but now Nehemiah comes along and they are stirred again by his faith and his the favors he has received from the Lord, and they're willing to apply themselves to the work. And so may these words be an encouragement to us, how the Lord accomplishes, and He will accomplish what He has purposed to do. May He be pleased to use us in that work as well.